When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning. Welcome to the Cone Zone. I'm Grant Cone. That's Lowell Cone, my dad, who is back from assignment. He was off on an official Cone Zone assignment, and now he's back. How are you, Dad?
I'm fine. I was on official business. I went back last week. I missed the Tuesday show because I was in New York with my friend Stewie, who I grew up with. We've been friends since we were 9 years old. And then I visited with my sister. She lives outside of Philly. She came in. We went to Brooklyn one day to where the neighborhood where I grew up, saw the outside of her old apartment. We buzzed. We wanted to go in, but the lady wasn't home. Iggy's been there a million times because his grandma lived there. And I played it. I sat in the playground with the old people. And I wrote about that playground. It's the first thing I ever sold to Sports Illustrated. Then we got pizza, which of course is better than out here. And what they said is that there's more acidity in the water, And it gives New York pizza that just wonderful taste. Anyway, now I'm back. I'm a little jet lagged, but I'm eager to talk 49ers with my beloved son.
Eager. I like that word. When you go to cover like a rookie minicamp, you hear the word excited about 800 times. And after a while, it starts to sound weird. I don't know why. I like eager better.
Eager's an interesting word.
Eager's an interesting word. Okay. This morning, Adam Schefter reported that the 49ers will start their season at home on Monday Night Football against Aaron Rodgers, Robert Saleh, and the New York Jets. This team was 7-10 last year. Rodgers went down week one. Let's see if he can make it to week two this year. What do you think of this matchup?
Okay. My first, when you told me about it this morning, my initial feeling was the Niners going to kill these guys. They were 7-10. Rodgers ain't what he used to be. Listen, he didn't make it through the first series, Iggy.
No.
Maybe he can make it through a quarter. He's well past his sell-by date. But then you and I got to talking. Robert Saleh is a hell of a good coach, especially on defense. They had a really good defense last season, and they played without a quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll beat the Niners. I firmly believe the Niners will beat them. Iggy, it'll be a game.
It'll definitely be a game. The Niners are 5-point favorites. It'll be an interesting test for the Niners going against Rodgers. I mean, they've beaten him a lot of times. They've handled him, that particular defense, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa. But it will be Nick Sorensen's first game as a defensive coordinator, so that'll be an interesting test for him and the Nick Sorensen, Brandon Staley, brain trust, the Siamese twins, whatever they are, working together to shut down the opposing offense. And then for the Niners offense, I think it's the most interesting test. They're facing the number three defense in the league last year. The Jets had a really good defense. And every time the Niners offense faced a really good defense from the AFC last year, they looked ordinary at best on offense. So it'll be an interesting test.
And also, Salah knows what they do.
Salah knows what they do. So it'll be sort of an insider's look at what the Niners' weaknesses are. He knows the Niners as well as any coach not on the Niners. And he knows what they want to do and what they're not good at stopping. So right away, we'll see how he decides to attack them.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that offense with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback can score efficiently against the 49ers?
I think the Niners have a really good defense, and they're going to make it tough on Rodgers in that offense.
That's
but they can score. They have three good wide receivers and a good running back. I don't know about their offensive line. They're kind of similar to the Niners like that. So I think the Niners defense should be able to hold up to that matchup.
That's what I think. I think it may be closer than I initially thought, but I don't think the Jets have enough offense to compete with the Niners, even though their defense is probably just about as good.
Yeah.
I just don't think they have enough offense. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers is an elite quarterback anymore. I think they're deluding themselves about Aaron Rodgers. I do.
I agree. And I think if the Jets were to win this game, or if the Niners were to lose it, it would be a lower scoring game, a game where the Jets defense is responsible for the win. That they can do Kansas City did, or Baltimore did, or Cleveland or Cincinnati, and hold the Niners to about 20 points.
I have to say this, Iggy, it's a long time in the future, but is it the first Monday night game of the year?
September 9th, yes.
Okay. If the Niners were to lose that game on Monday night, the first Monday night game, and at home, that would be
almost
devastating. Yeah. So let me say, of course it's not a must-win game. There were 16 others, but it's a must-win game.
It feels like it, and it feels like the Niners have more to lose than the Jets. They're the ones that were in the Super Bowl. They're at home. They're five-point favorites. They're supposed to win. But the Jets are probably one of the better teams that the Niners are expected to beat this year.
Iggy, you saw Salah at the owners' meetings. Did he seem like a nerve? I mean, you talked to him for 20, 25 minutes. Salah and Grant are actually friendly. Did he seem like a nervous guy to you? Did he seem worried?
No. He seemed frustrated by all the criticism he's getting in New York, and feels like it's a quirk of New York how everyone wants to fire him now. And it's like, wait a second. We just went 7-10 without Aaron Rodgers. Why don't you wait and see what we do this year? He seemed very confident, actually. Like, amused that his particular market is so ruthless and wants to fire him so bad, but really thinks he's going to win a lot this year. I mean, he seems fairly confident in that. Now they have to keep their quarterback healthy.
Which I'm not so sure they can, because he's as slow as a fire hydrant. He's got the mobility of a fire hydrant. I wouldn't be surprised Iggy, I'm not thinking he's going to make it through the whole season, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. I hope they have a good backup, because I don't think he's going to make it through the whole season.
In that sense, this is kind of the worst time to face the Jets, week one, because he just might make it through the whole game. Now, last year he didn't, but this year he might make it through the whole game. Or if he only makes it through three quarters, that could be enough.
Yeah. Iggy, do you know who their backup quarterback is?
Let me look it up right now. I don't know who it is. Jets roster. 1 second. Opening up a tab. Hopefully this doesn't kill everything. Tyrod Taylor, who frankly is not a bad backup quarterback.
Okay. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's better than Zach Wilson.
He's a quintessential backup quarterback, and he can do things.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Kind of like Josh Dobbs.
Absolutely. What I want to say about Salah, never having met him, but having observed him and having known him through you, he seems like a man very comfortable with himself.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Extremely. Knows who he is, comfortable with himself, and is not hyper defensive.
Right. And Iggy, if he had wanted to, he could have been on Wall Street. He could have been a multimillionaire working on an investment firm. He's that brilliant, right?
His brother's on Wall Street. I think he started off on Wall Street and then just decided he had a passion and went and became a coach and worked his way up all the way from the bottom with no connections.
I love it. Yeah. So anyway, again, I really feel the Niners are going to win this game. I just think all in all, even if the defenses are pretty equal, and they may be, Jets may even be better, the Niners offense is so much better, according to what my gut feeling, that I think the Niners are going to win the game. But it's, you know what? It's not a thrilling matchup because who are the Jets, but it's an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, it is an intriguing matchup, and you keep going to the Niners are going to win because you like their offense better than the Jets' offense. I'm sort of leaning like I think the Niners are going to win because I think they've done such a good job against Aaron Rodgers throughout the years, and he's not better now.
Right. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we say they've done a good job, this is what I've observed. He gets discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sulks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a future Hall of Fame quarterback, he has a crummy in-game personality. Iggy, am I wrong to say he sulks?
He'll miss a throw. He'll get hit, and all of a sudden he's looking at his offensive linemen. He's looking at his receivers. He's looking at his coach. Like, you guys aren't helping me. You guys are letting me down. Like, they're going to lose today. They're going to lose today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just don't like the way he comports himself. I really don't. I mean, for example, a beginner like Brock Purdy comports himself better than – he's not as good as Aaron Rodgers and never will be as good as Aaron Rodgers was. But a quarterback's mentality, much more character on the field than Aaron Rodgers, but not the tools.
So here's the thing. If Steve Wilkes were here, this would be kind of scary. We've got to see what Nick Sorensen has planned for Rodgers. Sala did a good job against him. Ryan's did a good job against him. But last year when the Niners faced really good quarterbacks, Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, they diced up the 49ers, made it look easy. And Aaron Rodgers, even though he can't move, you said the mobility of a refrigerator, that's true. He still can throw a football as well or better than anyone on the planet. So if the Niners play really soft coverage, if their pass rush is as weak as it was last year, they will lose. It's going to be very interesting to see how the 49ers get Aaron Rodgers to pout and eventually quit like they always do.
Iggy, I'm going to go a little tangential for a moment because you got to remember I missed a week.
Sure.
In last week, Sorensen spoke. Now, I did watch the tape or the video of him. What was your impression of how he presented himself?
I thought he didn't give a particularly impressive presentation. I'm used to this. The fourth defensive coordinator they've had there. Robert Saleh, D'Amico Ryans are both head coaches now. They would come out completely shaved, ready, prepared, energetic, upbeat, eager to answer questions and show that they are head coach material. Like, they were carrying themselves like head coaches before they were head coaches as first year defensive coordinators right away. Then Steve Wilkes came in and he had been a head coach. So he had all that kind of dignity, even though he didn't have the same type of like positivity and energy that the previous two had. Sorensen came in very low ebb, quiet, answered questions like this, had a hat on over his eyes so that you couldn't really see his eyes. He hadn't shaved. He needed a haircut. He didn't have specific answers to questions. Not Saleh, not D'Amico. Maybe he's going to be great, but he didn't carry himself like a guy who expected to be a head coach in a year or two. He kind of carried himself like a guy who was a bit surprised he was the defensive coordinator of the 49ers.
Okay. Let me tell you what I got just from the video. I thought he seemed like a pretty honest guy. I thought he may have been unimpressive, but he seemed honest, straight ahead, not a subtext. What you saw was what you got. I thought he was likable. I did. I thought he was a nice man. Whether that translates into being a good defensive coordinator, I don't know. But I felt watching him, I'd like to talk to him again. If I were covering the team, I'd like to have 15 minutes with him. What I still do not understand is what he and Staley are going to, how they're going to work that out. Because he kept referring to Staley as if they share a personality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He didn't come across, I'm the defensive coordinator. He came across, it's sort of me and Brandon. And I don't really know how that works. Now, people asked, will you be on the field? And he said very assertively, yes, I'll be on the field. I like to be on the field, and that's fine. I assume Staley will be up in the booth, right?
Mm-hmm. I would assume so. They didn't say for certain.
Assume so. Anyway, my feelings about Sorensen as a guy, I thought he was okay. I did. As a coach, I didn't have any feeling at all. I didn't have a one feeling or another. But I do know sometimes when these people get introduced, I don't like them, but I kind of liked him.
Yeah. He just didn't seem to have, I mean, interesting, impressive answers. Like, what is Brandon Staley going to do? Oh, he's going to help with a little bit of everything. Okay. You guys kind of struggled against the run last year. What are you going to do to fix that? We've addressed it. We'll fix it. Oh, okay.
I see what you mean.
Why did Kyle and John hire you? Why do you think that you got this job? What do you bring to this job that got you the job? You'd have to ask John and Kyle that. Okay. So I thought he spoke in a lot of platitudes in a soft voice, and maybe he's great, but he just didn't project much confidence.
Okay. What he was saying. All right. What you're describing to me is a lifelong assistant coach, not a coordinator. Yeah. A lifetime assistant coach who's used to not talking, who's used to people not caring about or even knowing.
Right. Right. As opposed to Sal and D'Amico, who you knew they were preparing to be head coaches because they were ready for that moment. It's like, now I get to talk. I've been dying to talk. This guy seemed like, I don't need to talk necessarily. Staley could talk. I'm just here to coach. He was a player in the NFL for 10 years. And I'm sure that's why the players on the team respect him. They like him. It seems like.
You know what he was thinking, Iggy?
What?
I don't need to talk to you. Get look, Brett Jerry.
Look, Jerky. Wouldn't it be funny if you asked a coach a question one time and he just stopped and said, look, Jerky, I don't need to talk to you. No one knows. 645 people who are watching have no idea what we're talking about right now. If anyone knows the reference, go ahead and put it in the chat.
Be a riot. That would be a riot. Yeah.
Look, Jerky. All right, so we have the Niners beating the Jets week one. Yesterday, the Detroit Lions gave Jared freaking Goff a four-year extension worth $212 million total. That's $53 million per season for Jared Goff, who is not bad. He's a good quarterback, but he's definitely not great. What do you think of this move for the Lions and what it means for the Niners?
Okay, let's divide it in half. First, the Lions. Let me ask you a question, Iggy. Does this make him the highest paid quarterback?
Not quite. Joe Burrow's making $55 million a year. I think he's right below that.
So he's right below Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's compare Jared Goff to Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. Are they on the same level?
Not even close.
Not even close. Joe Burrow is a gorgeous quarterback, Iggy. What he did to the Niners last season, wow. I mean, he couldn't miss. Didn't he, something like 15 passes in a row he connected?
Yeah,
something like
that happened.
Yeah, I mean, he is a gorgeous quarterback. And here's the thing about Jared Goff, because I've thought about this a lot, and I think about boxing, and it applies in boxing. There are certain boxers who do well when everything's going well.
Yep.
And then when there's a little, when the other guy lands a good shot or fights back a little, the guy who was doing well, or he gets a cut, all of a sudden he doesn't do well anymore.
Yeah.
That's Jared Goff. He's a very good first half quarterback. Mm-hmm. But as the game goes on and you really need him to take more and more responsibility, he shrivels.
Yes,
he's a shriveler.
He's a shriveler.
He's a shriveler.
Yeah.
So first of all,
shrinkage.
What I think he's got shrinkage. So what shrinkage. I feel is that the Detroits, boy, did they make a mistake.
Yes.
They made a mistake. the idea that they think this guy is worth that kind of money and that they're going to win a Super Bowl with that guy, it shows a complete lack of looking in the mirror and knowing who you are and what you need. So a big raspberry.
Will the Lions ever win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff making that kind of money?
They won't win a Super Bowl with him making any kind of money.
Thank
but
you.
With that kind of money, they'll have to scrimp on other positions. So it's a horribly bad deal that they made. Now,
yes.
More important to our viewers, what implications does this have for Purdy and the 49ers? Purdy right now, he makes nothing, right? He, my mother would say he makes Gurnish, nothing.
He makes Haikak Veblich.
Haikak Veblich. So yeah. what eventually would happen is, his guy will start negotiating and say, well, you know, Jared Goff, we have better numbers than him. We're a better player. We get further in the playoffs and all of this stuff. We want $55 million a year because that's the going rate.
Yeah,
and it's a fair point to make. Mm-hmm. Our kid has fabulous numbers. He's a leader. He's phenomenal. We want $50 million a year for 4 years.
Jalen Hurts is making $51 million a year. Lamar Jackson's making $52 million, and Jared Goff's making $53 million. So yeah, Purdy's going to want $54 million at least.
Yeah, we want to be. You know, I'm an elite quarterback like that. Iggy, pretend you're the general manager of the 49ers. They come to you with that kind of a demand. You know, with all honesty, our guy is really good. We want $54 million a year for 4 years. What do you say to his representative?
No.
Yeah. Boy, am
Absolutely not.
Yeah. No. In addition, take a hike.
Yeah. No.
Take a hike.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this world, you are not worth $54 million a year.
No.
And what's more, if we pay you that, we won't have as good a team on defense. We'll have to weaken on defense, and the offensive line will be even worse. So I would say no. Absolutely no. It's not a good deal for us. Then the representative says, so what are you going to do? Iggy, you be the GM. I'm the agent. If you don't give us $54 million, we're eventually going to walk. What are you going to do for a quarterback?
Okay, look, since we're so generous and we're player-friendly, you're welcome to call around the league and see if you can find a team that would like to give us two first round picks and give you $55 million. You find that team. We don't think that team exists. We think every team in the league thinks we can get the most out of your client because we have Kyle Shanahan and this team that we have currently constructed. So go ahead, try to find that trade that doesn't exist. And in the meantime, you're under contract through 2025. So you can play on that. And then when you're done with that, making $2 million, we can give you the franchise tag and you can make a lot of money for 1 year on that. But $55 million a year? No. Not, absolutely not. We would rather trade you.
And what's more, we found you at the bottom of the heap. We can find somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the only one. We can find somebody else. That's how I would tell him.
Absolutely. Now, Dad,
Iggy.
I'm not saying Baker Mayfield is as good as Brock Purdy, but I think a quarterback like Baker Mayfield would have a lot of success on the 49ers. And I think you could say that about maybe 25 players.
Maybe I couldn't say 25, but I do think he's replaceable in that system.
Yes.
And nor do I think he would be as good in other systems because he doesn't have the arm for it. But for what Kyle Shanahan wants, I'm not putting him down. I love to watch him work. I do.
Me too.
I love to watch him work. I'm not putting him down, but I'm not signing him $54 million. Iggy, now I'm asking you, again, you're the general manager. What, aside from the fact that it would weaken the team because you couldn't pay for other positions, why is he in and of himself not worth $54 million a season for four seasons?
Because he's not a great quarterback. He's a good quarterback. Maybe a very good quarterback, but we've seen it over the years. Kirk Cousins has been getting a ton of money. He's not a great quarterback. He's a very good quarterback, and he's done nothing in the playoffs because his team is compromised. He makes too much money, and he can't he can't make up the difference. You know who can make up the difference? Patrick Mahomes. He makes $45 million. Mahomes makes $45 million a year. How are you going to win with Purdy making $55 million a year? You can't beat the Mahomes with Purdy making 900K. So, no, absolutely not. The way the Niners are set up, they're set up for a young quarterback on a rookie deal to have success if he's experienced, or a veteran who's cheap. But they don't even pass the ball enough to justify spending this much on a quarterback. They don't.
That's the key. They're one of, they throw among the fewest passes in the league. Mm-hmm. They're not built that way. So you don't pay a guy who's not going to throw that many passes that kind of money. And Iggy, I want to say one other thing. I'm going to go to Mahomes because he's the best. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs could be having a crummy game, like in the Super Bowl. Mahomes is the kind of player who can win the game himself. Now, he doesn't play defense, so I'm talking offense. But he can win the game himself. He can overcome a crummy team, a crummy game, and a crummy game plan. Brock Purdy can't do it. You're paying a premium for people who can win on their own. Burrow, you know, maybe the guy up in Buffalo, Josh Allen. There are a few like that. But Brock Purdy, it cannot win on his own. No. If you take the running back away, CMC, he's probably not going to win that game.
No, and what's interesting, that he had that three-game losing streak in the middle of the season. He didn't have Trent Williams. He didn't have Debo Samuel. He lost three games in a row. Now, those are two very good players, but he still had Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle. Three all-pros, and they couldn't crack 20 points in any of those games. That's alarming. Right.
So, look, I don't think he's worth that kind of money. And I love your idea. Go shop your guy around. See what you get. We're willing to give you – we're willing to make him wealthy for two lifetimes.
Sure.
We're going to pay him a lot of money, but we won't pay him what we're paying what they're paying Patrick Mahomes. No way.
That's fair. Instead of saying, like, just go look for a trade, you can make him an offer. Here's a four-year extension worth $40 million a year. It's still nauseating to even offer that much, but it's not as much as Patrick Mahomes, and it's about $15 million less than what you might think you can get on the open market. If you want all the money you can probably get, go ask some crap team like the Titans to give it for you, and you can go play for them and suck the rest of your career. But if you want to win, you're going to have to take a little bit less and be content with making $40 million a year. What do you think?
It's interesting is I'd give him 35.
I like it. Let's see who's making $35 million a year right now. Nick Bosa is making 34. Aaron Rodgers making 37 a year. Derek Carr, 37. Daniel Jones, 40. Dak Prescott, 40. Stafford, 40. Josh Allen, 43. Yeah, I think 35 is fair. How about you make the same as Nick Bosa? You guys both make 34.
Yeah, I paid him 30. I mean, listen, $34 million. You say, $34 million, it's not a lot. You don't want it, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll set up my grandchildren. I'll set you up for life. Are you kidding me? Here's what I want to do, Iggy. Let's name the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think Purdy's going to make it. I think he's going to be one level below. But let's go slowly and name. Could we go back and forth and name elite quarterbacks and keep track of how many we have?
Yeah.
I'll start with Patrick Mahomes.
Certainly. Josh Allen.
Burrow is 3.
Herbert.
Herbert is 4.
That's 4.
Okay. So at the best, Brock Purdy is number 5, which is great. Is there anybody better than him that would slip into number 5?
Well, there was the MVP of the league last year, Lamar Jackson, who destroyed Purdy and the 49ers. I don't know if he didn't do great in. He lost to the Chiefs. So did Purdy. There's also Matthew Stafford, who won a Super Bowl.
I would put Stafford ahead of him. Yeah. I don't like Lamar Jackson. As I've said, I think he's a great football player, but a mediocre quarterback. So I have
really
trouble putting
mediocre at best in the playoffs. So there's something. To
I don't like him. I don't like the guy in Philly. I think he's been exposed. I don't like him.
Dak,
I don't like. And so far, I have Purdy at six. I want to put in two others, the guy in Houston and the guy in Green Bay.
The guy in Green Bay. Yep, agree. Yep.
I think they may be at the same level as Purdy, but may have more potential.
I would agree.
But I would group them as the – we have the top five. I would group these three in the next three in any order you want. Now, that's pretty darn –
those are like the young quarterbacks who have the ability to maybe become elite one day. But of all those three, I feel like Stroud and Love, maybe I don't know football, they have the talent to get there, whereas Purdy – it's going to be tough for him to get better than he already is. Is that controversial to say?
No, I think it's fair, and I agree with you. And where he already is, let's be real clear, the cones are haters. He's wonderful. I love to watch him work.
He's extremely advanced. I mean, he plays the position like he's in his 30s.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would be really happy to have him at the right price, which is a big, big price. But he may not be as good as these other two young players from Green Bay and Houston, but he's with them right now. So he's at least in the top eight quarterbacks in the league, Iggy. That's pretty good.
It's extremely good. I would think so. Now he's got another year to prove it and stay healthy and keep it going. But so far, after a season and a half, I think you could confidently place him in the top 10.
Okay. I have another topic that comes off of that. I want everybody to remember that there was a time in sports with no free agency. When I was growing up, Mickey Mantle played for the Yankees his whole baseball life, I should say. And he didn't make the kind of money that they make now. I mean, you know, Hank Aaron, he was with the Braves. There wasn't free agency. And there was a big deal. Players should have free agency. You know, they're not indentured servants. And of course, that's a fair argument. I don't dispute it. But here's what I do say. Free agency has never helped fans.
Yeah.
Because if we're talking about $54 million for Brock Purdy, how much do tickets cost? Yeah. When I was a kid, when I was a kid and used to go to New York Knickerbocker games at the Old Garden, I used to get in for like $2.50 and it would be a doubleheader. Yeah. You know what I mean? A doubleheader on a Sunday afternoon. I was a kid. Now, I was on the train with my sister going to, I was with my friend Stewie. We were going from his house on Long Island into the New York City. The Knicks had a game. And we were sitting next to some older guy, younger than me, wearing Knicks shirt and all that. I asked him, how much does a ticket cost for this game? He said, courtside, $11,000. $11,000. That's free agency. You're paying for these salaries. How does that help that guy? How does that help a normal person see a sporting event? I saw it for $2.50 with my Midwood High School card. I got a break, and I saw a doubleheader. So anyway, I am not against free agency, but I don't see how it's helped any fan. Now, remember, I never paid for a ticket. They paid me to go to games. So that's not personal, but I think it's the idea that we're talking about $54 million a season for Brock Purdy. Joe Montana never made that. He's a better quarterback.
Yeah, 54. And he didn't make like the equivalent of $54 million a season in 1987. He didn't. The idea that that's what you get rewarded with for playing well for a year and a half. Well, I hope it works out. Let's do some sleeper picks. I was at the Giants game a couple of days ago, and my ticket was $95, which was a lot for a baseball game in 2024. They're playing the Dodgers. They lost last night. Dodgers are pretty good. Let's see what we got pick-wise. Keaton Wynn, he gave up one earned run in his last outing and zero in the one before that, although he was getting lit up before then. Keaton Wynn against the Dodgers. I wouldn't feel – although those were strikeouts. Hold on. Earned runs allowed. He gave up seven the last game.
He didn't get out of the first inning.
Yeah, seven earned runs, and now he's facing the Dodgers. What do you think? Two and a half earned runs, more or less.
More. Also, Iggy, I got to tell you, I love their leadoff hitter, Mookie Betts. He's Ricky Henderson. What a player.
With more power. He's so good. Yeah. I like watching a guy who can start off a game with a home run right away. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Not that many guys do that. Yeah. Flores, Ramos, Wade. Wade's hot. How about a hit or not for Lamont Wade? He had no hits last night.
A hit.
I like Lamont Wade. He's a good hitter. Then you got Flores, Ramos. We could do a Dodger. Or sometimes they don't let you do a Dodger.
Let's do Flores because I like him. I think he's a real hitter, and I don't know why they platoon him. So what is the thing on Wilmer Flores?
RBIs, strikeouts, hits. Will he get a hit today? Let's see. He had one hit last night, two hits the night before.
Yeah, he's going to get a hit. He's a really good hitter.
Okay. Let's get one.
If they play him.
Let's get one basketball pick, and then we'll call it a day. We got the Knicks. We got the Knickerbockers. The Knickerbockers playing tonight. Jalen Brunson, 32.5 points. He's been held below it. 32.5 is a lot. What do you think? Less? More?
No, I don't think he won't. He won't.
Okay. Okay.
Hey, listen, where I stayed in New York four nights before I went to Philly, I was at this Marriott property right down the street from the new Madison Square Garden, which is like 40 years old. But boy, was it hopping. Iggy, it was really hopping. And I got to tell you, Iggy, Manhattan is really exciting. They've done a beautiful job over there, and there's a lot of cops. Everywhere you look, there's a cop. I liked it. I felt safe.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. And then you come back to the Bay and you realize, wait, what are we not seeing out here? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, how come my car got broken into? Oh, yeah. Well, hey, my car hasn't gotten broken into since November, so knock on wood. If you guys like our picks, use promo code CONE, COHN, and get a deposit match up to $500 in your first deposit. Dad, there's news. The 49ers signed an offensive tackle today on May 14th. Chris Hubbard. Now, you might be shocked to learn that an offensive tackle who's still a free agent on May 14th hasn't played much football the last 4 years. He's 33. And last year he ended the season on IR, and 2 years before that he ended the season on IR, and the season before that he ended the season on IR. But from like 2016 to 2019, he was a legitimate starting right tackle for both Pittsburgh and Cleveland. And yeah, he's been hurt pretty much the last 4 years, and he's probably not going to start for the 49ers, but they got him. What do you think?
Do you know where he went to college?
He was an undrafted free agent, and I think he went to UAB, Alabama, Birmingham. Let me look.
So,
yeah, UAB.
Undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's all I know about him is what you just said. I would say his resume is not outstanding. However, they did address the position.
Yes.
And I'm pleased they addressed the position. So you know what? I'm open-minded. Maybe the guy's a late bloomer. God love him for doing that.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that this is how they addressed the position. Like, they needed to address it. And they also signed a guy, Brandon Parker, earlier this offseason. They've signed two offensive tackles who've missed a lot of time and been hurt, as opposed to drafting some. So that, to me, says that they're more confident signing guys who've already been developed than trying to develop their own offensive lineman.
Right. And it also means they're pretty confident with their current offensive line.
How did you not
get these guys? Because they got these guys who have big question marks over their heads.
Right. So if he's a backup, that's fine. But if he has to play an extended period of time, can they keep him healthy? Can he keep himself healthy?
Yeah. And what if one of these guys has to play left tackle?
Yikes.
Yikes.
Yikes. So Chris Hubbard, he's healthy now. Okay. It's that time of year where the Niners have practices and they're not open to the public, and we see him and write about him. And the players read him. They want to know what the reviews are of their performances and practice. And sometimes players can get a little upset if you're harsh about what they did in a practice. And then you got to see them eventually. Let's talk about being a journalist and facing the athletes.
Okay. I did it. I was a columnist for almost 40 years when newspapers really mattered and the players read it and knew your name. They all know Iggy's name, by the way. I am a New Yorker and I'm very plain spoken. And sometimes I would say, Jack Clark is not a good left fielder. He can hit sometimes, but he's not a good left fielder. And that's a problem on the team. Okay, I wrote that. If you have any guts, you have to be there in the clubhouse with the Giants the next day. So if Jack Clark has anything to say to you, you make yourself available. Otherwise, you're a punk. And there's a lot of punks in my profession. So I would get up early, knowing that Jack might want to yell at me, curse me out, and other players as well. And on the drive over from the East Bay, I'd be nervous because no one likes to be yelled at or threatened, or not that Jack Clark ever threatened me. He's a nice man. But, and when I would go walk in through the door into that private space where there's 25 players and coaches and all this, my hands would be sweating and I would have to take a deep breath and say, boy, here it comes.
Yeah.
Here we go. And sometimes it was really tough. Like one time, the Giants, still a long time ago, they were on a losing streak. And I wrote a really critical column of how they were playing. The headline said they were losers. Now, again, this is newspaper time. Baseball players, all athletes, don't know how newspapers work. I wrote the column, but I didn't write the headline because the headline has to fit in a space in the paper. I would be in the ballpark or at home. I wouldn't see the physical paper. So there are people called headline writers. I have nothing to do with it. In the column, I did not call them losers, but the headline writer called them losers. When I saw that, I thought, oh, my God, I got to go over there because they're not going to understand this. So I'm walking toward the clubhouse, and one of their coaches, Jimmy LaFever, who used to play for the Rookie of the Year for the Dodgers years ago, he sees me. You know, we're not losers. How could you say that? Frank Robinson, the manager, isn't a loser. Come on, Lowe, what is that? That was gentle. And I didn't even explain. You know, I didn't write the headline. Please, Jimmy, you know, you have to take it. Now I go into the clubhouse and Jim Barr, a very good relief pitcher for them and a nice man, said, if you think we're bleeping losers, when are yelling at me for the whole team, in front of the whole team?
Yeah.
If you think we're bleeping losers, why don't you get the hell out of here? Who needs you here if you think we're losers? And again, I had to take it. I couldn't say, Jim, well, you know, I didn't really write the headline, all that. Yeah. Frank Robinson, get the hell out of here. And so you have to stand your ground.
Yep.
I'm not leaving. I'm credentialed. Yep. And you have to let them say what they say. Mm-hmm. And you feel like in colonial America, like you're at this, you know, in the stocks in the middle of the square. And then people go back around their business and you're standing there hollow feeling.
Yeah.
And what you do is you stand there quietly in case anybody else wants to come. And then you try to interview someone. And they may tell you to screw off. But then a day or two later, it goes away. But here's the thing. I had to weigh an equation. I don't like particularly to have people yell at me, but I also feel the need to tell the truth as I understand it. So the equation is, will I tell the truth and put up with people screaming at me?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
The other choice is just praise the team. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're on a 10-game losing streak. But some of those were good losses. And I see some hope for this team when they were hopeless. Well, if I go in, no one's going to yell at me. And they're probably going to come over and say, you know, Lowell, you really are fair to us. You really give us a break. It's so nice to have you in the clubhouse. I wouldn't want to go there on those circumstances. I'd want to go where they're angry at me. And they say, you know, I hate this guy, but at least he comes in. At least he tells the truth as he perceives it. And eventually, They won't like you, but they'll respect you. And the guys who kiss ass, because a lot of them kiss ass because they don't want to feel uncomfortable. They don't want to be yelled at. The players do not respect because they know who's who and they know who has guts.
Yep.
And so whenever I had a bad time, and I had hundreds, Will Clark used to give me the finger every day I walked in to that clubhouse. And now we're friendly. He used to give me the finger. And I would say that's the price of doing a good job, because this putz over here doesn't get the finger. This putz gets, come over here, let's talk. You know, what are you doing and all this? I don't want that crap. I earned your being angry at me, and I earn your respect. That's how I felt. And so people, now I'm not covering the Niners, so I don't know who's who. I know my son has courage because I told him it his whole life that the truth is more important than being liked. The truth is more important than being liked. And I'm not sure that everybody, well, I'm sure that some people don't feel that way. They want to be liked and they don't want to have any upset in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true. And so most guys just avoid those confrontations. When you embrace them.
I had to. Otherwise, I couldn't live with myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine becoming a journalist and then just being too scared of the confrontation. And so just giving up every goal you ever had, every reason you ever got into becoming a journalist in the first place. You know what? I'll just praise the team. It'll be a lot easier.
Yeah, I'll be the public relations adjunct to the team. The players will like me. The coaches will love me. They may even tell me a little bit off the record. You know, someone has a hangnail. They won't give me any big news, but they'll say who has a hangnail or who has diarrhea or something like that. You know,
it's funny. You said Will Clark used to hate you. He was very young. I interviewed him a few years ago when I was still working for the Press Democrat and covering baseball, probably like 2018. Had him in the dugout before a game. And at the end of the interview, I mentioned I was your son. And he was like, oh, God. Tell all I say. I was like, he loved you. And I think that happens a lot where the athletes and journalists that clash 20 years later look back on the experience like romantically, like, man, he was tough. He was tough, but we got through it. And if I see him now, I'll give him a hug.
Absolutely. They respect you. And because you chronicled when they were great and when they mattered. You chronicled it, and they knew they earned it. If you wrote something nice, that you, they earned it.
Right. Steve Young said that about you, right?
He did. I always got along better with Steve than with Joe Montana. When I see Joe now, which, of course, I won't ever probably see him again, but when I see him, we're polite to each other, but we're not warm. Steve and I are warm. We might even hug when we see each other.
I don't mean to toot our horn too much, but I feel like you got to be kind of, it takes a certain kind of brain to get what we're trying to do. And Steve gets it. Well, he got you. Sala gets me. Kyle doesn't. Joe didn't. So there's just some differences. But certain players get it. Certain coaches get it.
And the players, let's talk about players for a moment. They have to feel that you'll also praise them if they deserve it.
Of course.
That you're not out to get them. They have to feel that there's a normal person in here. That if you have a good game, even if you don't like them, you'll praise them. They have to feel that. And they have to feel, and this is very important. I don't know how much of it goes on anymore, Iggy, but when I was doing it, there was a lot of talking off the record with team executives, with coaches, and with players. They would tell you stuff off the record. And they had to feel that you would not betray their trust. You would not get them in trouble. For example, Frank Robinson might tell me something, and I could use it. He said I could use it, but I could not attribute it to him. So I'd say someone associated with the team said such and such, and he'd be looking to see if I loused them up. If I did, he'd never talk to me off the record again. Right. But because I was a person of honor and didn't want to lose a source, I never, ever violated that.
Yeah.
And they have to trust you that you do that, that you're tough enough to keep your mouth shut. Yeah. There's a lot of in sports writing, you think, you know, athletes have to be tough, and they do. Football is a violent game. The writers, I'm calling them writers, but journalists, presenters, whatever, they have to be tough too. They have to be able to take criticism, take abuse, and know what's fair and what's not fair. And they need to walk into that locker room the next day holding their head high. And if you want to yell at me, I'm here and I'll give you your shot. I will. I won't argue with you. I'll give you your shot.
Yeah.
It takes guts.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it.
I've been approached. Well, I was approached by Kinlaw on the practice field in the locker room, Dante Pettis, Jaquaski Tart. Now, both of those guys were actually very respectful, but I called Pettis a bust, and he came up to me and was like, what's your definition of a bust? How am I a bust? Explain it. And that was an interesting conversation. Jaquaski Tart also wanted to know why I say the things I say. And a lot of times it come up just like, I'm genuinely curious, man. I don't get it. Other times you'll go, like someone like Talanoa Fungo will come up to you like, hey, man, I watch your show. I get it. I think you're a lot of fun. So it's a whole different, or someone like Jimmy Ward, who was like, man, you were so unfair to me for so many years, but you finally got it. And I'm cool with you. Like, at least you saw the light eventually. People like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I have found, I'm not going to talk about real life, but I do think it applies. But what I found with all the thousands of athletes I dealt with, very often conflict led to a deeper relationship and a deeper understanding.
Right.
When I was covering the Giants in the 70s and 80s, Jeffrey Leonard, everybody was scared of him. They called him Penitentiary Face, Hackman. I stood up to him, and we became very friendly. He even invited me to his house one time, and boy, did he tell me stuff off the record. And it's just a matter of, do you have the guts? Do you have the guts? Because I want to tell you, when I went to Stanford and did 6 years there in advanced degrees, no professor ever said to me, you're going to have to stand your ground and tell someone to go screw himself. Right? Those guys would have shriveled. Talk about shrivelers.
Shrivelers.
I had to learn that in Brooklyn when Big Sal and Little Sal used to beat me up. And then I had to stand up after that and say, okay, it's over with. Let's go play ball.
I had to stand up, or at least hold my ground, with Kinlaw on the practice field, on stream, and then in John Lynch's office the next day. It was like it was a triple header. And by the end, we shook hands. And when he left, I said, congratulations. And he said, thanks. So who knows? In 20 years, maybe we'll give each other a hug.
Yeah. And I bet he appreciated that you praised him. And when he said thanks, he could have said, screw you, or turned his head away. But you had reached an understanding that no one else, no other journalist in that room had with him.
No. Because we've been through something together. It changed our lives.
Exactly.
Both of our lives.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, there's a feeling about that.
Yes, there absolutely is. And the further we get away from it, like, he just got a contract with the Jets. If he's a success, if I'm a success, we can look back at it one day and laugh about it. Remember how upsetting that was and how everything worked out great for both of us? Hopefully. Dave Barclay says, Lowell and Grant been killing it for years. You guys are great. I always remember Lowell from 90s, though. Keep it up. 90s Lowell was incredible. 90s Lowell? Man.
I'm almost 90.
It was like you and Tom Petty really running it in the 90s.
Oh, God, was Tom Petty good. Wasn't he?
Who do you like more, Tom Petty or the Eagles?
Not even close. Tom Petty.
Tom Petty.
Much better. Oh,
yeah. Eagles had a couple songs.
Yeah.
No. Desperado. No.
Desperado was good.
Desperado's good. Corey Soto says, this Goff versus Purdy debate omits a whole lot of context. Goff has produced for much longer, went to a Super Bowl with one team and an NFC championship with another.
Those are really, Corey, those are really good points. I still feel that Goff is, I'm going to call it, weak. There's a certain weakness in his quarterback temperament, and I don't see him standing up to pressure very well. But I could be wrong.
Gen 3 Cali says Sorensen was personably evading responding to questions regarding changes to the defensive scheme, suggesting there's an entire rework going on. Okay.
I don't know what it means because he didn't say anything. I don't know what to read into it.
Jay Garz says, what price is Brock Purdy worth? $35 million per year. Well, we agree on that.
We agree on that. That's a lot of money.
Dazza says, what has Brock Purdy shown that he can win a Super Bowl making $50-plus million per year? We saw Brock Purdy in three games without Trent and Debo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I agree with this statement. I wouldn't pay him $50 million. Late to the
Michael
show.
Michael Kant says, late to the show, Mr. Cones. I apologize if I missed this take, but given Goff's contract, is Brock the next $50 million quarterback in your opinion?
We talked about it, and we both said we hope not.
Kyle Green says, I already got tickets to the game against the Jets. I'm flying out from South Carolina. What's the best hotel to stay at in SF? Any recommendations for restaurants?
You know, we got to tell you, San Francisco's pretty far away from Santa Clara. Iggy, it's about 45 miles.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. If you're going to fly out from South Carolina, you can't not go to San Francisco. You're really going to fly cross country to stay in Santa Clara for a weekend?
Yeah.
So you're going to have to rent a car and then make the commute. But if you're going to stay in San Francisco, there's a nice Hilton right by North Beach and Chinatown, which is a fun place to sort of centralize yourself. That's
and one. If you're in North Beach, any Italian restaurant there is great in North Beach. That's the
literally
one of the great
anyone.
Neighborhoods. One of the great neighborhoods of America.
Jad is Jad says, Lowell, do you think sports journalism has gone soft or is it just the West Coast? I think people either are too generous in praise or clickbait hate.
It's a really good question. I can't speak for other parts of the country because I've lived here since 1966. So I'm only really familiar with let's call it the Bay Area. I think the Bay Area has always been soft and is getting softer. In terms of journalism impact.
I would agree.
Would you agree?
I was talking to Robert Saleh about it, and he was like really, this was his main complaint. He's like, Kyle Shanahan doesn't understand how good he has it. He has the same seven guys covering his team every day, and they're all really nice. I have like 20 or 30 people covering my team every day, and they're all nuts, Grant. They're nuts. And I'm like, yeah, they make me look tame, right? Like, yes, they make you look tame.
I love Saleh. I love him. And Iggy, here's the thing. I don't know Shanahan. I'm never going to meet him. When you ask him a pointed question, not even a controversial question, just a straight-on question, he doesn't only look like he doesn't want to answer. Okay, he looks morally offended. Like you don't have the right. You don't have the right to ask him why he gave up on his running game in the third quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That to ask that question is a sin.
Disrespectful. Absolutely.
Yeah.
God bless America, says Grant. I was fighting for my life defending you in the homie group chat when everyone loved Jimmy G, but you were speaking the truth. Years later, all the homies are coneheads because they realized you weren't afraid to be wrong. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. Thank you. I love that. And I'm proud of Grant.
Shout out to the homies. Rome Gut Level says, Grant, you had a great role model. Pops, not all do. That is true.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. See, that's the real nepotism, just having a good dad. It's a big advantage over 90% of the population.
But Grant also had a wonderful mom. And I want to say, my wife, his mom, was a lot tougher than I am. Would you agree?
Yes, she was. Yes, she
you
was.
Wouldn't want to mess with my wife, his mother.
No, absolutely not. Like if a teacher didn't handle things correctly, you'd have to hear from my mom, not from my dad.
Not me, yeah.
Joshua Wyatt says, drop it, Grant. No one cares about you and Lombardi. Keep critiquing the team. It's a problem that you feel like you need to explain yourself. Don't.
No one mentioned this other journalist's name in our report today. I don't know why you're saying we're talking about him.
We didn't mention his name at all. Paul Tilton.
No.
Says, my two favorite cones. I rarely catch you two live, but never miss the show later. Long time OG Cone fan, and now many years new OG Cone fan. Thank you both.
Thank you, Paul.
My dad is OG Cone. I'm Baby Cone. Little Cone. On the streets. Joseph Stockbridge has been a member for 8 months. Thank you, Joseph Stockbridge. Dad, I think this was...
No, I'm not done.
Oh, he's not done.
I'm not done.
He's not done.
There's something we forgot. And this could, you could do this in 3 minutes.
I like three.
I was on special assignment, so I wasn't here last week for the mini camp, whatever. I would like you, in your best descriptive words, tell me what it was like, what you saw. But here's how it has to happen. Where you walk out of the press room and you start walking toward the practice field. I want you to say, I close the door and this is what I'm doing. And 3 minutes.
Okay. When did it start? It started 1:30. We walk out of the press room. It's hot. It gets really hot in Santa Clara. It's like in the 80s. We walk out to the room, to the practice field, and there's about 50 rookies out there, and they're just stretching. They look like real 49ers, but they're doing they're on their first practice ever. And you're all trying to find where the draft picks, where their numbers, where's 14? He's Ricky Pearsall. So they stretch and you're getting ready.
So you're looking, do you have binoculars?
No, they're right in front of you. You have a roster, because these guys are all new, and you're trying to figure out who, where are the draft picks, what are their numbers, where are they, what do they look like? And this is your first time seeing them in person. So what does Dominic Pooney look like in a jersey and a helmet? What does Ricky Pearsall look like in drills? Because I've seen Brandon Ayuk in the same drill. I've seen Deebo Samuel in the same setting. I remember them in rookie minicamp. So I'm looking and trying to just take in the first impression. Is he big? Is he short? Is he strong? Is he look like a rookie? Does he look like a veteran? So you watch them warm up, and they run around little cones, and then eventually they break apart and they do 7-on-7s. So the offensive and defensive linemen are just standing and watching, and the quarterbacks and the DBs and the wide receivers and the linebackers and the running backs are out there actually competing like they know the freaking playbook. And there's 16 plays of that, and 4 of them go to Pearsall. He doesn't catch any, but not all the throws are good. You're watching him go against Renardo Green. They match up against each other. Renardo Green presses him and jams him at the line of scrimmage and does a good job. Then he tries to cover him playing off, and Ricky Pearsall runs this beautiful stutter go double move and beats him. So you're like being bombarded with information and raw material, and you're trying your best to take it all in, which is really hard. Like, you go to a baseball game, everything happens sequentially. Pitcher has the ball, he pitches it, then spotlights on the hitter, either he hits it or not, and then the spotlights on the fielder. But in football, it's like, okay, there's 22 guys, or in this case, there's 14 guys in the field. Who am I looking at? And I was looking at Pearsall. He's the first round pick. I think that's the most important person to watch. When he's going against Green, great, now I can knock off two birds with one stone, watch two guys at the same time. But then there's certain guys like you don't see, like, well, I didn't make it a point to watch fourth round pick safety Malik Mustafa, because you can't watch everyone. And then you come away being like, damn, I missed that. And then Larry watched Malik Mustafa, so he can sort of fill in, and fans can go from one guy to another and get the full picture. It's like, it's hard. No one content creator, journalist can give the full picture, but the 8 of us, if we do a good job, can. So what I like to do is not stand with other journalists, because if we stand together, we sort of start sharing our observations and request confirmation that you saw that too, right? And then we all have the same report. So it's a little scarier, but stand on your own and try to get as many observations as you could. Like the time where Ricky Pearsall beat Renardo Green on a stutter go, he didn't get the ball. Quarterback threw the ball away. I just happened to be watching those two that time, and it stood out. It could have been easily something I missed. And I'm sure a lot of people didn't see it, because how can you see everything? So that's what I saw.
Are you writing in a notebook?
I'm writing in a notebook. When they're warming up, I'm not writing things down. I'm filming things. I'm filming the wide receivers. I'm noticing where Kyle Shanahan is. He's standing next to John Lynch. And Nick Sorensen is now in the crew. He gets to stand along with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to practice. That's where D'Amico Ryans used to stand. It's where Robert Saleh used to stand. So I'm sort of looking at, what's Kyle looking at? And then when they start competing, that's when I write everything down. That I think is the most important stuff.
How far are you away from the actual practice field?
It's right in front of me. I'm on the sideline. It's right in front of me.
Okay.
So the players are 20 yards from me.
Okay. And you can hear things.
Yes. You can hear things. Go ahead.
Kyle stands on the other side, right? Near the other sideline.
No. When they're warming up, but when they're actually doing 7-on-7, Kyle is in the end zone looking straight on it. And that's how his dad does too. Like, his dad will come for training camp to watch practice. He'll stand in the end zone. Now, I know some coaches prefer to stand behind the action at a 45-degree angle so they can sort of be closer and see what's going on in the offensive line. But Kyle likes to see, I guess, the opposite angle from the end zone. It's like his dad.
Sure. That's his choice. Yeah. Does he take notes?
No. He holds a football.
He holds a football.
He's always holding a football like he wishes he were the quarterback or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's going to watch tape later, and he can take notes. Or he may have a really good visual memory, and he doesn't need to take notes. I'm not putting him down. I'm just trying to bring people there.
Yes.
So now the practice lasts X amount of minutes or hour and a half, and then they blow that long horn, and you know it's over?
There's a long horn. Okay. Maybe they do it a few times, and then they all huddle up, and I think Kyle Shanahan gives some words of inspiration, like, good job today, keep working, and then they – give a cheer for themselves. And as that's happening, I immediately start walking off the field and do my little 2-minute instant reaction with the people in the background to show the viewers that I'm actually there. And it just ended.
Got it. And the players leave the practice field, walk across that little street, and go to their locker room in the stadium. Used to be the locker room was right next to the practice field, but now there's no cars on the street. It's just they go through a fence and there's a little street, and then they go into the locker room.
Yes. And they go to the locker room, and we're not invited into the locker room until the end of training camp. So we won't see them again.
Oh, you don't get really to talk to them?
No. What they'll do is they might bring out some players to the media room to talk to us. But until they've cut down their roster to 53 players in September, we're not invited in the locker room. And they, you know, it's funny how NFL teams make arbitrary rules. Like, it's their rules. And they don't really, they probably would never have us in the locker room if they didn't have to, but they chalk this one up to, I think, safety. Too many people in there. It's crowded. The room is freaking huge, but okay.
You know, in the old days, they would have people come talk, but if they felt it was too crowded, I could say to Rodney Knox, who was running PR for them, Rodney, I'd like to talk to so-and-so. Could he meet me outside here in the grass? Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll have him out here in 5 minutes.
They still do stuff like that. They still do stuff like that. Yes. Okay. You can ask to get a player and they'll bring them out. But if it's like someone like Brock Purdy, they'll probably say, we'll get back to you in 5 years. Yeah. If you want to talk to someone on the practice squad, I'm sure they can work that out.
Fair enough. Fair enough. If everybody was asking for Joe Montana, that would be bad too. So that's fair enough.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like Brock Purdy has time to give every single journalist in the Bay Area a 20-minute one-on-one. I get it.
But here's the thing, Iggy. What I would suggest is, you know, used to get a media guide. Now it's all online. Mm-hmm. But when they get their roster, there's going to be rookies on that roster and free agents that they came over. There's always a part at the end that says personal in their bio. I always read, because I learned things and it could lead to interviews. Like when I learned that, what's his face, was a painter?
Vernon Davis,
and he was a good painter. And I went up to him. I mean, first of all, he's a very nice man. And I went up to him. I said, you're a painter? He says, yeah. I said, would you bring some of your art to the facility? And I'll bring a photographer. I'll do an article about you, and we'll get photos of your art in the paper. Hell, he was there the next day with 7 paintings. So, Iggy, there are treasures like that in the bios of the new guys.
I wrote an article about Vernon Davis, the same article, essentially like writing about him and his paintings. And I asked him to bring one, and he brought one. And I remember it was a self-portrait, and half of his face was completely black, like shadowed. Couldn't see him. And it seemed like the most drastic artistic choice he made in the piece. So I asked him, why'd you paint your face like that? And he says, it's a good question. I didn't know at the time, but I've thought about it. And I think I was angry back then. And I think that kind of reflects the anger I felt as a young man. But that was an interesting answer.
Wow. By the way, I've seen that painting. It's a hell of a painting.
It's a hell of a painting.
Hell of a painting.
Yeah. Like, why'd you paint your face like that? I was an angry guy. Okay.
And he You love him because he answered. Yeah.
Wow. As opposed to, I don't know. I didn't think about it. It just looked nice. No, I was an angry.
Let me say, I have to watch the tape.
Yeah. Centennial the Great says, Dr. Cone and bro, Grant, greetings always. Question for Dr. Cone. Can you give three NFL or Niner equivalent players personalities for the following NBA players, Kobe, Jordan, and Magic? And that's a tough question.
Okay. Hold on. I want to answer this honestly. You got to understand, I didn't cover any of those players. All right? I never covered Kobe or Magic. Scott Osler did. He used to be in L.A. Jordan, I only had one interaction with him. In the one interaction, he was a complete dick, and he was that way to all of the media. And I'll say real quick why. It was his last season in the NBA. Iggy, who the hell did he play
with? With the Bulls.
So Iggy would know this. The Warriors PR staff is the greatest. Mm-hmm. Raymond Ritter is just the most wonderful, accommodating, lovely man. So before the game, Raymond comes, says, look, I have some good news for you. You know, it's Jordan's last game. We have so much media here tonight, and it's too much to go into the locker room. There's not enough room with the other players in the small visiting locker room, but we have an auditorium here, and Michael has very generously agreed that he'll talk to the media for a few minutes. He'll be up on a podium, and you can all ask him whatever questions you want. And it's about his career and what it feels like to be coming to an end. And it was all going to be very positive. Well, in the fourth quarter, Raymond comes back and he has such a long face. And I said, what's going on, Raymond? He says, Lowell, I have to apologize to you. He doesn't want to do it. Michael says, I don't want to go in the auditorium. Let him talk to me in the locker room, which is so inconvenient. Because there was maybe 50 people who want in a little locker room. Plus, he had his teammates. Where were they going to stand and get changed and all of that after the game? So I happened to go with a friend of mine who used to be a doctor for the Warriors, Jerry Cram. He and I went to Lafayette College together, class of 66. We're dear friends. And he went in the locker room because he was, had been a team doctor. And he stood very quietly. But the thing was, we weren't close enough. Maybe we were the third row back. Jordan was at his cubicle. And I'm going to say he whispered. Not only didn't he come into the auditorium where there would have been a microphone, he whispered. So if you weren't right in sitting on his lap, you couldn't hear him. Mm-hmm. So it was such a crummy thing to do. And I thought, you may be great in commercials and you may be a great player, but you're kind of a jerk. So as we leave the room, Dr. Jerry Cram and I, we stayed and we just stood by the door and looked, and everybody had left. And there's Jordan getting dressed, immaculate clothes, handsome. And Jerry looks at me and he says, points to Jordan and goes, asshole. So that's my feeling about him. And you can think of any asshole in Bay Area sports that you know, Jordan.
Whoops. I lost my little thing.
Fish and Chip says, this stream lasted longer than practice in 2024. John Farr says, Lowell, what are some of the top things you love about your son?
Oh, boy. John, thank you so much for that question. I'm going to answer this for both my sons, for Grant and my older son, Brian. They are loving people. Whenever I see Brian or I see Grant and I'm going home for the evening, they both hug me and say, I love you. Every night of my whole life, I admire them. I think they have morals. I think they have courage. I think they're intelligent. I admire my sons, and I feel that they love me, and I feel that I've earned it, and that's makes me feel wonderful.
Thanks, Dad. I love you too. Appreciate it. That's our show. We'll be back next week. Come on Tuesdays at 11 West Coast. Dad, good show. I'll talk to you soon.
This was wonderful. Talk to you next week, everybody.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.